This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What's something you hear every single presidential election? I know you should never say every time or never. There's things you shouldn't say, but I guarantee you, you've heard this and you've probably said this every election. What have you heard? What have you said? This is the most important election ever. Have you said that about this one? That's Trump. It's Dome. It's do we stop communism or not? It's, of course, the most important election ever. But it's not. Oh, don't get me wrong. It's very important. It's not the most important election ever. Every election isn't the most important election ever. And since the 60s, that's what everyone said.
This election is one of the most vital in the history of America.
The most important of all choices will be made by the American people at the polls.
This is the most important election in this nation in 50 years.
This is the most important election in history.
1996, in my opinion, is going to be the most important election of our lifetimes.
I am convinced one of the most important elections we're likely to see for the next 50 years.
All these choices make this one of the most important elections in our history.
Americans, this is the most important election of our lifetime.
This election could not be more important. This election is the most important election of our lifetime.
This election is the most important election in our lifetimes.
The most important election in our lifetimes.
This is the most important election of our lifetimes.
November 5th is going to be the most important day in the history of our country. That's the election.
Well done, Mr. Producer, putting together that little compilation. But it's true. Everyone says it. But every election can't be the most important election, can it? Some have had to have been more important than others. The most important election in this country's history was 2008. Though I'm not being dismissive about how important this next election is and the one after that. I don't know. They're all really, really important. 2008 was the one. That was the one we couldn't afford to lose, and we did. And we have paid and will continue to pay the price for losing that election for years to come, because that is the election that brought us Barack Hussein Obama. And you see, there are several things that make Barack Obama so incredibly damaging. Yes, the media, they've just slobbered all over him. I'm sure you remember all this.
Change has come to America.
We know that wind can make a cold day feel colder, but can national pride make a freezing day feel warmer? It seems to be the case, because regardless of the final crowd number estimates, never have so many people shivered so long with such joy.
It is radiant, the happiness. In fact, just us lucky enough to be in this business today, looking out the window here and getting the reaction when the crowd catches your eye, It is such a deal.
So it was that as many as 2 million pilgrims made their way to Washington and the mall to witness this most sacred event.
What a day it was. It may take days or years to really absorb the significance of what happened to America today.
From above, even the seagulls must have been awed by the blanket of humanity.
And the mass flickering of cell phone cameras on the mall seemed like stars shining back at him.
When Barack Obama started to speak, I was right in the middle of the crowd. People were crying. They were laughing. They were cheering. Suddenly, someone would just come up and hug you. It was just amazing. It was like you're standing in the middle of these strangers, and all of a sudden you had a million friends around you.
It was one of the most moving moments in my life.
Except that damaging communist was bringing poison into this country, into the government. And what made him so dangerous wasn't the media's love. The media does that for so many. It was his hatred of the country, combined with his natural abilities. He could speak well. He gave great speeches. He knew how to inspire people. And more than that, he knew how to implement his plans in the government. You see, he got into power. He got into power and he promptly began to clean out levels of government. He was even cleaning out, not just Republicans, he was cleaning out old, more moderate Bill Clinton types. And he was replacing them with people we've never had in our government before. He took every America-hating, dirty commie and he put them in positions of power in the military, FBI, IRS, you name it. He remade this government into a government that reflects his values. And that's the other thing about Obama. His values hate the country. We've had many, many bad presidents. You can argue we've had evil presidents. You can argue most of them were evil. We've had morons. We've had guys who screwed things up. Until the election of Barack Obama, we've never had one who actually wanted to bring the country down. Do you remember, it's a video maybe you've seen, but do you remember that video where he was at a ceremony with Michelle and she turns to him and very clearly says, all this for a darn flag, only that's not what she says. Remember him turning? Look at him. Remember him turning to her? Turns to her and gives her that nod. Barack Obama hated the United States of America, hates the United States of America. That's his mission, to bring down this country he hates. And that's why, look, that's why he sat in this church for so many years.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
That man baptized Barack Obama's children. Barack Obama took his America hatred and he brought it into the captain's chair. You see, if you get on a boat, you can survive maybe a moron of a sea captain. I don't know that you can survive a captain who wants to send the boat to the bottom of the ocean. And that's why to this day, Barack Obama stayed involved. Foreign or other presidents, the Bushes, the Clintons, all these people, when they leave, they leave. Just go retire, do some speeches. Barack Obama stayed in D.C. and stayed involved and still controls things to this day because Barack Obama's mission of destroying this country, in his mind, is not over. Every election isn't the most important election ever. They're all important. 2008 was the one we could not afford, and we lost it. And so now we're going to have to pick up the pieces. Steve Dace joins us next to talk about that. We'll be back.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. 3 times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the most important election you've ever voted in your entire life. There's a need for fundamental change in our economic philosophy as well as our foreign policy.
Steve, what really strikes me after looking at that is the Joe Biden, how young he used to look. But anyway, let's set all that stuff aside. Joining me now, Steve Dace, host of the wonderful Steve Dace Show. Steve, I have told people repeatedly, it's not that I'm dismissive about the coming election at all. The one we couldn't afford to lose is the one we lost in 2008. The Obama cancer is, well, right now it's terminal, buddy.
Well, if you look back on what's happened to the country since 2008, you are correct. Unfortunately, the Republican Party did what it typically does, and it nominated somebody that was no real threat to Barack Obama. Even if he had won, we were largely just delaying the inevitable. Remember, John McCain's big thing was don't call Barack Obama by his actual name or you're a racist. Barack Hussein Obama, to call him by that meant you were a racist. Remember the one time John McCain took over the lead and the Real Clear Politics polling average was in early September of 08. And then he canceled his candidacy so that he could pass the most unpopular single piece of legislation in American history at the time, TARP. And only to have the very first debate after that, Barack Obama hit John McCain from the right by saying that TARP was just too expensive and too much government. Good times. Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's the one we could not afford to lose, but we nominated John McCain, and that's why we lost it.
Steve, A lot of people who aren't hardcore politicos like you, obviously your audience will know this, they don't understand that Obama never left. And this is really what makes him so different than all the former presidents, the Clintons, the Bushes, and I don't even like any of those guys, but they don't really do much politically. They'll show up at a convention once every 4 years and ramble through a speech, but they walked away from politics. Barack Obama, though, is a man still very much on a mission, and he didn't walk away at all.
No, I mean, if you want to know who's really been running the country for the last 4 years, it's him and his minions have been running it quietly behind the scenes. I mean, this is essentially Barack Obama's third term is what Joe Biden represents. That's why I always scoffed at the notion of Michelle running. Why? Why put yourself out there? Why get memed to death by Trump and his people? Why? And then you have to, you know, supposedly anyway, at least that's the way we used to roll around here, be forthcoming about your business deals as a candidate. When they have all the power that accompanies a presidency now, while nice homes, Tory, I mean, they've got Aaron Spelling like homes and the Hamptons and everything else. They've got the, as Van Halen once saying, they got the best of both worlds, Jesse. They don't need to put themselves back to the scrutiny of the voters and back on a ballot. They're running the show now, and they get to cash the check and cash in at the same time.
Steve, foreign policy is one of those complicated things. Other than being a chicken hawk, I actually don't really indict anyone for their foreign policy. I have my own, but it's complicated, right? Diplomacy, the motivations of nation states. But Barack Obama was one of the first I've ever seen in my life who operated, as far as foreign policy goes, with a real solid hatred of America. And he just kind of assumed that the enemies of America had a pretty good point about how badly this country sucked. Talk about his foreign policy.
Well, he wanted to go to war in Syria, remember? Him and John McCain, that was one of McCain's last acts, actually, was to him and McCain work together to rally the country to go to war for, quote unquote, freedom fighters in Syria. And then there are the clips of him, you remember back in the day, of taking the knee to the Saudi sheikhs. But essentially, what we've learned on the right in the last few years is it's not the 1980s anymore. It's very hard to be dogmatic, as you said, about foreign policy in terms of an overall philosophy rather than a set of priorities. What is in the best interest of America and the American people, and then act accordingly. When you and I were growing up, dogma was, it was very clear dogmatically how to see the world from a conservative perspective. There was the Soviet world, and then there was the Western world, the free world. Things are much more balkanized now. What you see with Barack Obama's foreign policy is it's still very dogmatic philosophically. It doesn't matter what data shows, for example. I mean, you look at the Israelis, they gave away land for peace. They allowed a Palestinian free state right there within their own city gate. And what they got was a country that was elected duly by the people who wanted Hamas in charge. And then October the 7th, their version of 9/11. And yet, when confronted with that kind of data and that kind of an example, what the Obama view of the world will continue to do is hammer meat nail. It doesn't matter. They'll go to the same talking points. There needs to be a two-nation solution, which always looks a lot like the final solution. We already have a two-state solution, and it gave us Hamas as a country that basically the Palestinian state did for Hamas what the Vegas Strip did for the mob. Just legitimized it, gave it a legitimate front and the accoutrements of an actual government so that it was given some form of immunity while also standing to attack the Israelis from behind, which is what you saw on October the 7th. But these people don't care about reason. They don't care about data. They will make it work. Whether it works or not, they will construct the world as they see fit. They will magically think and project all the way through, and you cannot convince them otherwise. And it really comes down to a Marxist view of the world, Jesse. The Marxist views everything as oppressor versus oppressed, and that is the worldview. It's not the Christian worldview of sinful man, you know, rebelling against the grace of God. It's not a data or utilitarian based worldview on the needs of the many and the need outweigh the needs of the few. It is a strictly Marxist view. You're either the oppressor or the oppressed, and everything is seen dogmatically through that lens.
Steve, economically, obviously Republicans are pretty much just as putrid as Democrats are, but Barack Obama really, really moved this country to the left super fast economically too, didn't he?
He did. And if you look at, there's really no place further where you saw that, even though it's looked at as health policy, but really it was an economic policy. and that was Obamacare. And that was the culmination going back to the dawn of the Great Society, long before you and I were born, of essentially the fever dream of the modern progressive Democratic, post-Kennedy Democratic Party. And was the advent of a single payer healthcare system. And the reason why I include that in your economic paradigm, Jesse, is because if you go back 30 years or about 25 years prior when the Clintons tried this, and all of the private health insurance companies got together and they ran a series of ads. I think they were called Harry and Alice. And you might remember these. They were very devastating ads. The couple is just sitting around at the home, in their home, reading the newspaper about what the devil and the details of Hillary Care. And these ads just destroyed Hillary Care and led to the contract with America and the first Republican takeover of the Congress in almost half a century. What you didn't see in 2009, as Obamacare was being debated, you did not see the health insurance industry unite against it. I live in Iowa. That's the health insurance capital of the world. In fact, our Senator Charles Grassley was actually at the negotiating table with the Obama administration on Obamacare. Why? Because the economic paradigm had shifted. We had gone from greed is good and the CEO era of the Gordon Geckos and Lee Iacocca's, where everybody fought tooth and nail to be number one, to now what I would call youth soccer economics, where everybody just doesn't want to be number none and everything's too big to fail. And now government is no longer the enemy of big business, but they're actually in concert together, the classic definition of fascism. And so they realize, why fight big government? They're going to make people buy our product, whether they want it or not. Let's just go ahead and get in on the ground floor of this and unite behind it. And that really was the final cementing. You know, most of the time you see a major political realignment every generation, right? Roe versus Wade 50 years ago created the last major realignment where you saw the Christian conservative movement form, the alliance of Catholics and evangelicals that propelled Reagan to the White House. People like, you know, we're long overdue for another major political alignment. I would argue we had one. It just happened in the boardrooms of America, where these corporations went from, maybe they thought people like you and I were crazy, but they hated big government, and so they aligned with us, to, hey, we're going to be neutral and stay out of it. And now they are all in. They're the ones that are subsidizing and profiteering off of Pride Month. They are the proselytizers of the spirit of the age. They're bankrolling much of it. And that Obamacare was really the vanguard of that.
Yeah, better to sit at the right hand of the devil than in his path. That's exactly the route they chose. Okay, Steve, so to wrap this up, that begs the question, where was the American church during Obama's rise?
It was getting purpose-driven and seeker-friendly, and creating legions and legions of false converts while building massive megapolises in the suburbs that were modeled much more after Pottery Barn than the Church of the New Testament, Jesse. That's what it was doing.
All right. We'll be back.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted, but we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment, on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What I told people, I was making a podcast about Benghazi. 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word. One that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yes, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
First, no matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it. If you don't have insurance, you'll finally be able to afford insurance. And everyone will have the security and stability that's missing today.
Man, talk about aging poorly. And I'm not talking about Barack Obama. Our insurance costs as a family of four have quadrupled since the passage of Obamacare. What a disastrous piece of legislation that turned out to be. Joining me now is someone who knows a lot more about it than I do, Dr. Aaron Cariotti, author of the book, The New Abnormal, which you really should pick up because what's happening with our medical institutions in this country, they're absolutely frightening. Okay, doctor, for those who are not in the medical industry and don't understand, how did Obamacare change your industry?
Yes, so it's a complicated question because it's one of the most complicated pieces of legislation that's ever been passed. There were so many provisions in the legislation that virtually no one in Congress who voted for it read the whole thing, much less understood it. And there's been a lot of commentary on some key things in Obamacare, the individual mandate that required people to buy insurance, and the state-run exchanges where you go online to buy insurance that turned out to be a real mess when they were first rolled out. But the long-term effects, I think, go beyond those two things. We've seen the closing of rural hospitals, and we've seen hospital mergers, which ultimately give patients fewer options in terms of where and from whom to get health care, which obviously contradicts the remarks that you just quoted from Obama, where he was saying, if you like your doctor, you're not going to have to find another one. Basically, most people now cannot even identify who their doctor is because medicine has turned into a top-down managerialist enterprise where so-called experts at the top dictate how everything is going to go for everyone underneath. And this top-down control has increased the number of bureaucrats. We have more people in healthcare now that are in jobs where they never actually encounter patients than we have people in healthcare that do face-to-face contact with patients, whether that's doctors or nurses or the person who greets you at the office when you walk in. So healthcare costs have grown in large part because of the administrative burdens that have been laid on healthcare systems by top-down managerial control. I'll mention just two other things that probably, you know, people experience when they walk into the doctor's office. The first is the physician no longer looks you in the eye. Right, spends very little time examining you or even listening to your chief complaint. Most of the time is spent staring at a computer screen and asking you questions that have very little relevance to what you actually came in to get treatment for. There was a provision in Obamacare basically requiring the adoption of electronic medical records, which sounded like a good idea at first until you realize that it's basically turned physicians into glorified data entry clerks that are having to check a bunch of boxes and ask a bunch of questions and gather a bunch of information for third parties that want that information, rather than attending to the patient who came in with a specific issue that they wanted addressed. Patients feel like cattle being moved through hospital systems now. I don't know if you've had this experience where if you're in a hospital now, they'll actually scan a barcode on your wristband to log into the electronic medical record system or before they administer a medication. And I understand it's a quality control measure, but it turns people into sort of like a supermarket item. You know, you're made to feel like cattle being moved through this system of turnstile medicine where you're processed by nameless and faceless bureaucrats rather than a doctor or a nurse who knows you personally and can verify, yes, this is the right chart for the right patient because I actually know this patient, I've treated them over a period of time, or, you know, this is the right medication for the patient because I'm actually connected to this patient in a longitudinal way. And part of this came about because of another provision in Obamacare that most people don't understand. Medicare stopped paying for services and basically gave us bundled payments for, you know, a type of intervention. In other words, this turnstile medicine came about because every hip replacement is treated the same, right? You get one payment to the hospital for doing a hip replacement. And if the patient has a complication, if the patient takes a little longer to recover than average, the hospital basically resents that person because that person is a liability for the hospital. They're an outlier in this system that's designed for maximum efficiency. So we get hospital bureaucrats, chief medical officers that are obsessed with what they call throughput, which is basically run the patients through the system as quickly as possible. The focus is not on health and healing. The focus is on maximal efficiency. So I there's many other things that I could say about Obamacare, but I think to make a very long story short, Obamacare has increased centralized government bureaucratic power over medicine, taken power out of the hands of physicians or small groups of healthcare providers that knew their patients, that knew the needs of the local community. And basically what we're seeing now is a crisis in medicine and strong dissatisfaction with the way medical care is provided because people feel like they're being treated like an interchangeable widget in a factory machine of medicine rather than a personal patient that's known by someone who's cared for them over a period of time. That's what Obamacare gave us.
It's so funny you brought that up about the data entry. I just had my physical, just blood work getting done, and standard annual blood work. That's exactly what he did. He walked in with his little nurse and assistant. He sat down in front of the computer and just asked me questions as he's sitting there just clicking things on the mouth, entering things. It's I'm not used to it. I'm not ancient. I'm 43. I'm not used to this kind of medical care.
Yeah, that's right. And some physicians are so fed up with that they actually hire people just to enter a system enter your information into the medical record, which is obviously wasteful, right? The patient should sit there face to face and talk to you and take a history and do a physical examination and run, you know, appropriate lab tests, you know, not just ordering things indiscriminately in order to check a bunch of boxes or to cover all the bases. But that kind of individualized medical care is very hard to provide now because hospitals and doctors and physician groups are disincentivized to do that. They're incentivized to check boxes, which typically have nothing to do with your health. And the health outcomes are also poor. RFK Jr. has been talking about this recently. Trump has been talking about this more recently after bringing RFK Jr. on board his team, that we spend more on healthcare than any other developed nation, twice as much, but we're like 48th, 49th in terms of healthcare outcomes because we've created a system that functions like an inefficient bureaucracy rather than a decentralized system that tailors healthcare to the needs of the local population.
How do we fix it? Can medical care go back to any resemblance to what it was as long as we have Obamacare, or is this just what we're stuck with as long as Obamacare exists?
I've been arguing recently, I published a piece in The American Mind about a concept called the parallel polis, which was developed by Czech dissidents living under communism, who basically said, look, sort of the mainstream institutions of society are so corrupted that it's really hard to fix them from within. And so our task right now is to create a parallel civil society, basically create new institutions on new models. And there are models for this. There's new models for medical societies with doctors from Harvard, Stanford, and Duke University. I recently founded a new medical society called the Hippocratic Society, which is, you know, an alternative to medical societies like the AMA that have bought into this managerialist revolution in medicine. There's healthcare cooperatives and new models for healthcare funding and healthcare provision that are popping up here and there. And basically, what I think we need to do is support those new models and those new institutions to grow them, to opt into them, to find new and creative ways of delivering better healthcare for less money. And basically, once the proof of concept is out there, those things will start influencing the mainstream institutions. So I'm not sure that we're going to get, you know, a legislative proposal in the next administration that's going to repeal Obamacare, reform it in ways that would be decentralizing and empowering to doctors and patients and local communities. But we can certainly start doing those kinds of initiatives on the local level without asking anyone's permission for it. So there's a lot of physicians who are opting out of these systems entirely and setting up small practices or small group practices that are trying to deliver healthcare in different ways and trying to finance it in different ways. So I think we need more of those kinds of creative, small scale, localized initiatives, the Hippocratic Society that I mentioned being just one of them, but there are other examples of this. And it's probably going to be a 10 to 20 year project of developing those institutions to the point where it's clear that this type of decentralized, localized healthcare system and these new models of delivering care are actually superior. People like them more. They want to go see their physicians more. They're getting better health outcomes. They're actually improving their health. I think it can be done, but we have to start on a sort of small scale and get creative.
I like it. So there is some hope. Doctor, thank you so much. I appreciate you, as always. All right. We're not done ranting on Obama. Jim Pfaff joins us next. He has some memories. You'll remember. Hang on.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way. And we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What I told people, I was making a podcast about Benghazi. 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Somehow, and there are a lot of historical reasons for this, gun ownership in this country became an ideological issue mm-hmm. and a partisan issue in ways that it shouldn't be.
He was so good at that. Gosh, I loathe that man. He was so good at pushing his filthy communist ways and acting like anyone who opposed him was being political. Ah, it's not ideological. Just let me disarm you. And you know what he loved to do more than anything else? I will despise him for this more than anything else Barack Obama did. He's the one who mainstreamed running to the camera after a mass shooting. You never saw that prior to Obama. Now, every Democrat does it across the country. They're practically gleeful when a bunch of kids get mowed down in school. Joining me now, Jim Pfaff, president of the Conservative Caucus. Gosh, it used to drive me crazy watching him do that crap, Jim.
He weaponized the Oval Office in ways more than any president had before him. Remember, just 5 days before the 2008 election, when he was first elected, he says, we're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming America. There's no doubt that what he meant by that was not to go away from the Constitution and to move away from every traditional norm, traditional institution that had made this country great and really made us prosperous. And we're seeing the end result of that happening even to this day. In fact, every major problem we're looking at probably has its origin and root in Barack Obama's presidency.
Jim, Obama, people remember slightly his background as much as they could possibly remember because how the media bent over backwards to cover it up. But take as much time as you need and explain once again this guy's background. He was not the standard run-of-the-mill Democrat at all. This dude is an America-hating commie from way back.
There's no doubt about it. In fact, he was trained indirectly by an America-hating commie named Saul Alinsky. You remember back in the day when we were talking about Barack Obama and he was touting himself being a community organizer, and that's what he used to do. And when you would bring up the Saul Alinsky problem, people would tell you, what are you doing calling him a communist and even calling Saul Alinsky a communist? Saul Alinsky, his mentor was John L. Smith, the union organizer, very avowedly communist union organizer from the early 20th century. You listen, I'm not trying to beat up unions entirely here. I have my negatives with unions, but not all people that get involved with unions are communists. The problem is unions were founded in this country from a communist impetus to radically transform America. That was their whole purpose and goal. Saul Alinsky developed the most precise methodology for doing that. When you look at, for example, all the wokeness in politics, ESG, DEI, this is all has its foundations in community organizing. What Saul Alinsky did in the 1960s was he found a way to extract money from major corporations so that he could fund his efforts by threatening them to harm their businesses. Barack Obama did that in a sincere and deep way during his presidency. I mean, everything that we have a problem with woke culture has its origins in Barack Obama being able to utilize the office of the presidency to fundamentally transform America if he could.
Yeah, he was one of the first ones. I realized the Clintons love to do this kind of crap too, but not to the level Obama did with weaponizing his Justice Department. He just looked at his Justice Department as if it was his plaything, a weapon he could aim at all his political opponents, and he did it well.
And again, don't forget that Eric Holder, during the Fast and Furious debate, where we found out that the United States government was sending guns down to cartels in Mexico that were finding their way back up on the street. By the way, don't talk to me about Second Amendment, NRA, whatever organization that stands for guns in this country. Don't tell me that they're the problem. Barack Obama was that problem. And you it makes you kind of wonder. And remember, Eric Holder was reprimanded by Congress because of the Fast and Furious thing. Don't forget, it might be possible that whole gun running operation was intended to bring chaos to the United States that they could use to change the political debate. You always wonder this, but yes, beyond that, you refer to him weaponizing the Justice Department. In every way possible, Eric Holder, under Barack Obama's direction, and certainly because Eric Holder thinks the same way, went out to weaponize politics for the advantage of the advantage of Democrats against Republicans. The IRS was weaponized against the Tea Party movement to thwart their effort to take this country back, which we saw the beginnings of, but was quickly squashed. And also not only by Barack Obama, but by some Republicans who didn't want it to happen either. But really, Barack Obama utilized every lever of power that he had as president to change how we do politics in this country. All of the problems we look at, the weaponization of government against Donald Trump, and the persistent effort of our deep state to keep conservatives from having any effect, whether it's on social media platforms or anywhere else, in the media even, this all began with the Obama administration. We are looking, the chaos that we see in our politics right now is a direct relation to Barack Obama.
Jim, Obama's foreign policy was dreadful in every way, but anyone, even a nonpartisan observer, could see he really, really seemed to have a real axe to grind with Israel, snubbing every chance he got to twist that knife, he twisted it. Now, I understand people not really caring about other countries, but he really was bothered by this nation. Why? Where'd that come from?
It's hard to know specifically because he hasn't said things clearly enough in public, or do we have any records of discussions with him to put a fine measure of understanding on it. But his father was a Muslim and from Africa, was an anti-colonialist. So it's either direct sympathy with Muslim sentiment, which I'm not entirely certain is the case, but it does come from this colonialist idealism that Barack Obama clearly was part of, that would resent not just Israel, but any country that came into power in a local area. So I think that's motivating a whole lot of it. The other part of it was that Benjamin Netanyahu, who was prime minister during Barack Obama's administration, was a conservative who believed in and still does believe in fundamental principles of liberty. And that really offended Barack Obama's sentiment because he doesn't believe in fundamental principles of liberty. Lastly, he falls into that basic Democrat tendency that is anti-Israel as much as they want to claim otherwise, because they really do not want Israel to succeed in that area. They have political reasons to connect with the Arab countries there, and they have a disbelief in these principles of democracy. Don't forget, Barack Obama's administration spent, I think the number was $800,000 in an effort to take down Benjamin Netanyahu during one of their election cycles. They were literally involved with American tax dollars to take down Benjamin Netanyahu.
What about Venezuela, Cuba? I remember that picture from Cuba of Obama going down there. Why? What was that about?
Well, again, I think it's this proclivity to be closer to communism ideologically than to be part of a free market, freedom-loving liberty ideology. Listen, Barack Obama is not a constitutionalist. He was a constitutional, he studied constitutional law and all. He was not a constitutionalist by any stretch of the imagination. Without a doubt, he wanted to fundamentally transform us away from constitutional principles. But in empathy towards that, he loved people like Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro, who was still leading Cuba at the time. And frankly, it's just an ideological alignment. So there's always been this desire among Democrats, all the way back into Teddy Kennedy back in the 1980s, and some Democrats before him, who had this sympathy with communist Russia during the Cold War and with communist ideals. I mean, again, what's playing out right now? Look at what's happening in Brazil right now. What's taking place in Brazil is precisely what Barack Obama was working towards during his presidency, a shutting down of political opposition, a utilization of the levers of the judicial system to thwart political opponents, and then a building within the structure of the government system to inoculate, against conservative ideas. That's and constitutional ideas. That's what Barack Obama did. He's very third world in that regard.
No doubt. Jim, thank you so much. That was excellent. I appreciate it. All right. I have final thoughts. Next.
Would you guys consider anything less than the championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way. And we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What I told people, I was making a podcast about Benghazi. 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, we can recover from Barack Obama, but it's going to take a long time. And we have to understand that he's still behind the scenes, still holding the strings, still working. We have to counter his network and counter his power. And we have to understand wherever we find his influence, it has to be removed. If, Lord willing, Trump is elected, he has to go find everyone Obama put into power and remove them from power. It must be done. All right, we'll do it again.
Whatever team Fi is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.